and welcome to today's live webinar titled Alleviating Publishing Pain Points at Their Source, sponsored by SPI Global and powered by Book Business Magazine. I'm Matt Steinmetz, publisher of Book Business, and I'm pleased to welcome you to today's event. Before we get started, I wanted to point out a couple of quick tips on how you can make the most of today's event. If you have any technical difficulties, you can troubleshoot by clicking on the Help widget at the bottom of the console, or you can let us know via the Q&A box. You can also use that same Q&A box to submit your questions to today's panelists. We'll be addressing select questions toward the end of the event, but you can send them in at any time. Please also make sure that you disable any pop-up blockers on your computer so that you can utilize all of the widgets and bells and whistles that you see on the console. And speaking of those bells and whistles, please click on the Tips for Attendees widget. That'll show you what these widgets do and how you can customize your experience today. So here today to discuss our topic are John Wheeler, Vice President of Strategy and Emerging Technologies with SPI Global, as well as Greg Sullivan, Senior Vice President of Content Solutions at SPI Global. We're going to kick things off today with John. John Wheeler is an industry veteran with over 20 years' experience in publishing and expertise in the deployment of e-publishing, e-learning, and multimedia solutions, bringing a unique perspective to this discussion, having worked on both sides of the business. As Vice President for Strategy and Emerging Technologies, he works closely with SPI Global's operations team in developing technology-enabled solutions that offer higher-value services and position the company as a strategic partner to its clients. John, I want to thank you for being here today and hand the mic over to you.
Okay, Matt, thanks a whole lot, and welcome to everyone that's on the call. As Matt said, I've been in this business a long time, and I actually kind of bring a interesting and unique perspective. I'd like to say it's a 360-degree view of the issues and problems facing publishers. I spent many years with a very major publisher and was in charge of a lot of their media products. So I understand, you know, what the brave new digital world is doing and really get a good feel for the issues and the pain points that these publishers are facing. Today we'll talk about alleviating, you know, publishing pain points at their source. As I mentioned earlier, I have a fair bit of experience on the publishing side, and now that I'm on the supplier side, it's been very interesting to see how many of what we thought were unique issues and problems are shared across all of our publishing customers, and these are customers both large and small. One of the things that we constantly remind ourselves at SBI is that as publishers actively pursue new ways to produce and deliver content, as a supplier, we must continue to adapt and focus and expand the scope of what we do in support of our customers. Just a quick word about us as an organization. SPI Global is in the business of empowering and supporting publishers and content providers in both the traditional copy editing, typesetting, and printing world, as well as in the new digital publishing world. And if you look across the full spectrum of tasks that publishers have to perform as part of the publishing process, SPI offers services and products in just about every area, from the commissioning, authoring, or collecting of raw content to the development and enhancement of content as it moves through the production process, to the digitization and transformation of content into e-products, the testing and distribution of electronic products, and finally, customer-facing support. Whether we're talking workflow development, developing new service offerings, or increasing operational efficiencies, SPI supports our customers with over 30 years of publishing domain experience. Here's what I think is a very interesting quote from one of our customers that goes right to the heart of some of the problem spaces we'll talk about today for publishers. We found that as publishers are actively pursuing these new ways to produce and deliver content, they've had to change their focus and how they approach the business of publishing. The question here is how do we as suppliers or publishers as publishers leverage all of the mature processes and methodologies developed over the years for primarily print products into the brave new world that we find ourselves in right now. here's what we call thought balloons and quotes that we've heard across our entire customer base. And it's interesting. It doesn't matter if we're talking about STM publishers, people who are journal-specific, people who are book-specific, educational publishers, K-12 publishers. They're all grappling with the same set of issues. Whether or not ebooks will be dominant, there's the fact that there's multiple standards to support. There are literally billions of mobile devices and smartphones out there that are potential targets for content distribution. We got the fact that all of these items are very complex and drive very complex business models that involve multiple stakeholders across the publishing spectrum. So you've got the marketing people and the publishing people and the operational people all having to work together in areas that they never had to work before. And an interesting central thought that we found was that 4 out of 5 of the executives feel that their organizations need significant training or retooling in order to handle the changes in both the marketplace and the digital future. And this cuts across all aspects of the publishing continuum, you know, from commissioning editors that now need to think in terms of acquiring and managing content to production staff that need to dismiss the concept of pages, chapters, sections, and what have you, and to the engineering, technical, and IT staff, which are now part and parcel of the publishing business, since content more often than not is delivered electronically as well as in a print form. This is another quote from one of our customers, this time one that talks about the potential of the marketplace. How can they grow what used to be a single delivery product into multiple platforms, multiple delivery methodologies, and multiple marketplaces? This is a huge opportunity across the publishing spectrum, and one of the areas where we see our publishers struggling the most as they're looking to adapt to the new digital reality. In November of 2011, we sponsored a study that was conducted by Book Business Magazine. Thank you, Book Business. In the study, we asked the respondents, what would be your company's biggest challenge right now? As you can see, there was a wide variety of answers, quite a wide array. And even though it was a wide array, it actually fell into two distinct areas. The biggest area, as reported by our respondents, were driven by the explosion of e-products and all of that means. The secondary area was the internal challenges and issues around cost containment, proper staffing levels, and the effect of the economy on their customers. And what we feel is that the reality is a little bit of both as far as the big problems that we have and pain points in, for publishers. We find that our publishers are being asked to do more with less as far as investment, as far as staffing, as far as CapEx, while at the same time, they're facing all the challenges of the brave new e-world. Whether it's now inserting proper workflows for markup into the production process, adding content enrichment and transformation into the publishing process, and digital delivery, you know, they're doing all this at the same time. They're under tremendous pressure to cut costs and increase their efficiencies. And we're seeing that they're taking a very hard look at all processes and functions in their organization, looking for answers to things such as what can be done to improve time to market and how can we make e-products faster, easier, and cheaper to produce than the traditional print workflow. Let's pause for a second, and let's ask the group that's listening in a poll question that basically asks how they are coping with the changing business models or new services being offered. How have you, to all of our attendees, how have you accommodated this change? And while the what we've suggested here as answers are kind of simple, I think that they will get us to the heart of some of the issues that we'll continue to discuss in the rest of the seminar, as well as give us a snapshot of the issues facing our current audience. I believe this is a single select answer, so you can only pick one of the options. So to adjust or to cope, You know, did you bring on additional staff? Did you build infrastructure? Have you hired consultants? Do you work with strategic offshoring partners? Some of the above, none of the above. Why don't you take a second and fill this out? And once your answers are tabulated, they'll be shown to us in real time. And here are our results. I'm hoping everyone has weighed in by now, and they're certainly interesting results. And they kind of follow what we've been talking about as far as being able to hiring consultants, strategic offshoring partners, two or more or none. Oh, none of the above. That's an interesting. Let's see, that's the biggest one. Right now, I'll turn this over to Matt, who can introduce my colleague Greg Sullivan to step us through what we see as possible solutions to these problem areas.
Thanks, John. I appreciate it. That was interesting stuff. And I want to ask you to hang tight. We will have a question and answer session here after Greg's presentation. So I'd like to now introduce Greg Sullivan. Greg leads SPI Global's U.S. and international teams across the publishing and content industries, where the company has earned industry-wide acclaim for its achievements in the STM, education, and legal verticals. Greg recently restructured SPI Global's Content Solutions division to offer a complete suite of digital publishing, content enrichment, marketing, and customer support services. His strategic vision helps to identify a client's pain points, envision its short and long-term business objectives and needs, and enact a strategy to enable the publisher to flourish in the future. So at this point, I'd like to welcome you, Greg, and turn the webinar over to you.
Thank you very much, Matt, and thank you, John. And it was interesting looking at those results. Obviously, the highest results, a lot of folks have not yet made a decision or moved in that direction. So part of what I would like to cover is looking at, you know, what does the future look like? How do you proceed in this new area? And ultimately, what is the best way to go forward and adjust to these changes in your business models and so forth? So we really had three of the major options. It was about hiring new staff, building those new internal infrastructures, whether it's technology, departments, what have you, or combining departments. Hiring a consultant to come in and guide the process, guide you as publishers and to get through that, and then hire a strategic partner. And then maybe it's a combination of those. So that's kind of the three areas I'm going to focus in on a bit and then talk about, you know, what are those criteria to really go through and what makes the most sense for you. But as you do that, it's really important to look at, you know, some really what I would call decision-making criteria. And one of them is really the people that you would have involved with this. You know, what is their experience and flexibility? What we find a lot is you may, within our client organizations, they'll have great staff, but they're really good at something, but they lack something else. And then can you afford to go higher to supplement that to really build in your organization? So looking at the current staff or perhaps future needs, what will that ultimately look like, and making sure that you're really tapping into that expertise and getting what you need to grow the organization. And then when you're looking at, you know, the overall cost, you know, making sure that there's an all-in consideration. Have we looked at what it will mean from both an operational expense, an OPEX, or from a CAPEX? You know, make sure you're concluding everything such as depreciation and looking at the true cost of ownership to operate and run and then build in the future as well. Looking at speed to market, what does that need to be? We have clients that will tell us, I need to be in market with my new platform, my new solution in the next 90 days, and it's just a concept right now. Sometimes it's a year out because we're going to restructure internal departments. We're going to look at hiring outsourced partners. We're going to expand current relationships. So what is that speed to market? What is it that you need to achieve to make sure that you're on there? And then also making sure that there's a roadmap and an understanding of what's coming around the corner. Do you understand what's around that bend up there and what's going to be coming at you? Yes, you can see the climate of today, but because you're focused in on what's happening within your publishing organization or within your organization as it is, you know, do you have a good view as to what's going to be coming down the line? We see many folks at a lot of the conferences that are going on. We interact with many folks in a lot of these webinars, and we're also, you know, interacting with our client base. But I'll tell you, that's one of the most scary things is, my goodness, I'm trying to deal with the climate today. Will I understand what's going to be happening tomorrow? Do I have the right folks on staff today? So when looking at that, making sure the roadmap is clear, and I'd say also make sure the roadmap is supported as well. So those are some of the things I'm going to, when I'm kind of walking through this, these areas that I'm going to be touching on, and just want to make sure that you have an understanding of kind of what's driving some of our comments. So when we look at hiring staff or building up internal resources, obviously there's a tremendous amount of control over that, which is quite exciting and scary at the same time. When you build that, you know, yes, you have a vision of what you want to achieve, but, you know, sometimes when that vision's on your shoulders or your organization's shoulders, you don't have all the influences from the outside and benefiting from best practices. That can be a little daunting, but, you know, there's ways to supplement that, and that's looking at, you know, doing a combination of hiring a consultant or leveraging your potential partners. But I'll tell you, one of the things when I look at this first item is, does this also have the internal support from the executive team and from, you know, from a political standpoint internally? Many times, yes, we want to do this. Yes, the market's demanding we do that. But people don't always understand that roadmap, and that's why I'm making sure that roadmap is clearly understood. It's clearly supported. So once you have that level of support and it truly becomes a mandate by both shareholders and stakeholders, the success is that much more clear. And then when it's driven internally, the support and power is given to that. So making sure that is full clarity, and you can have that control over the process. Also, excuse me, when looking at that, is there, when you have that support and you have that political capital, if you will, is there the expenditure and the CapEx that is put behind this to acquire the needed technology? So if you as the business owner is driving this, but the budgets are being adjusted or there's issues with the technology team that they don't want to invest in this, you've got to be very, very careful that you've got that support. You can go back to that mandate and say, you know what, guys, this is that priority and we got to drive that forward. So making sure that is there and that we're able to leverage that going forward. You know, I go back to this all-in approach. As we all know, we've all been through upgrades, we've been through transitions in technology, and there's always that, it is unanticipated, but I also call it the interrupted cost. What is the cost of interruption? Is everyone ready for that? Is everyone prepared for that? So, again, going back to that all-in approach, has this been considered, and are you looking at all that? So, you know, and it comes to both the CapEx view as well as an operational and OpEx view. Do we have full consideration? Have we anticipated the interruption cost that we may be dealing with? So, you know, looking at that and then driving forward into the technology, you know, the technology choice and selection is absolutely critical in how it's being supported, because oftentimes you might want to go out and be an early adopter of something new that's hot, but then is it truly battle-tested? Is it going to bear the pressure of production? And if it's critical to revenue, which it is in most organizations, you know, you've got to make sure that that's the right selection and you understand that. And then also looking at things that if I purchase a technology or I embrace a technology that is proven, but is it about to go to launch, you know, are they about to go to a 2.0? Or is there something that's coming up that's kind of chewing away at things? You know, do I really want to invest in that? So making the right selection internally on the technology is going to be critical as well. And then there's this, the final point here is, you look at the experts internally, you look at the teams that folks have internally, and is it best to have them managing internally this process, or are there higher-level strategies you want them on? Do you want them out ahead and looking at what's around that bend, as mentioned earlier? So really leveraging the internal people to go from really managing these processes, so from building and operating these processes to ultimately managing and driving forward. So just things to consider and views that we've shared with our clients, and also some of the concerns that clients have shared with us. So just want to make sure that we're able to bring these up. Now, when we look at a consultant, there is tremendous value here, but sometimes the cost can be high. And so I always go back to this point with a client. I said, you know what? Yes, the cost can be alarming, and you want to be really cautious and wise here. But the question I always ask is, are you going to really leverage all the learnings and knowledge you're going to gain from that consultant? Because quite a bit of times, you know, a consultant come in, they can see the issue, they can address things from a strategic level, but not always translate that to an actionable plan. And what happens is the value was created through that process, but will it be translated and will it be used to really impact operations? So, consultancy is a critical part, but it's how do you engage that relationship and we ultimately get the value out of that. And then one of the other things we always bring up and we want to be aware of is when looking at, you know, bringing in a consultant to be a part of this process is you oftentimes will meet the A-team, and are you going to get that person? I like that person. When they leave the room and you go back and you collectively talk, you know what, I believe that person can do that, but are they going to be the person that's going to come in, or am I going to get the B or C-team potentially? So not a bad thing, but just something to be aware of and something that we want to make sure that we're working with our clients and the consultant. You know, is this truly going to be the team that we're going to have working with us? Another point here is time to market. Go back to that speed to market issue that was talked about just moments ago. Oftentimes, you maybe started at a broader level when going through a full consultancy engagement. And is that going to impair the time to market and ultimately get you to where you want to be from a revenue or from a product launch standpoint or from a product evolution standpoint? So where we find the consultants do a very good job is understanding the broad scope, talking about the strategy, talking about the actionable items on a higher level. Will that ultimately get you to where you want to be? Sometimes the answer is we're going to take 18 months. Sometimes we need 90 days. So where does this fit in, and is that consultant wired in to where that wants to be? And we, you know, we're going to talk about some of these things in just a little bit as well. And then also, one of the things that we find is that sometimes a consultant understands the tried and true technology, but they may not have all the views into the latest or to things that are being tested or some of the latest elements in technology that, you know, a partner can bring or someone that's operating that technology can bring to the relationship. So understanding the role of a consultant, I think, is really the takeaway here, and what role and what process do you want them to serve to ultimately get where you want to be in this whole technology evolution that we're talking about today. So the next one is looking at, okay, you know, when looking at a strategic partner, you know, what are some of these key elements that want to be understood, and what are some of those key benefits that want to be understood as well? So one of the things that we always like to talk about is when you're looking at a strategic partnership is because you're really looking at, you know, there's a couple things that I believe I'm going to be able to achieve here. So one of them is there an opportunity to reduce my operating expense, but also stay current, not bear that cost of evolving what I need my processes and my platforms to look like. I'm able to put that burden over to my partner. So, you know, there's a benefit inherent with working with a top-tier partner that's going to help you kind of get to that next level without bearing all of the cost. Another very interesting thing that we see happening, I talked about this just a few slides ago, was redirecting your staff. Is, you know, you have people that have become experts in building and providing this level of support, or at least envisioning what this could look like or helping the company evolve. What happens now is we're able to take those people, take that expertise, and now manage those partners, manage a partner who's going to be delivering that. So very, very important that, you know, people say, hey, we're going to work with a strategic partner. Doesn't mean we're eliminating. It means we're evolving roles. It looks like we're going to be leveraging this expertise internally and going to that next level. One of the nice things as well is with the partner is that you've got to, you know, you're relying on them to really stay current, to provide the best, the new, the newest technologies, the newest platforms, the newest processes, so you're able to stay up to date and your technology is staying stayed up to date. And then driving that time to market, because a lot of these systems you're gonna, you would leverage if you work with a partner are already operational. They're being leveraged perhaps for other clients. Best practices are understood. Speed to market is usually enhanced or quickened while not sacrificing any type of quality because they're already tried and true. Not always the case because some clients are pushing partners to use newer technologies, things that are just coming on the market. And I'm going to touch on that in a case study. But again, you know, the quality standards are understood, so you're able to get to market quicker and ultimately, you know, create a revenue stream or enhance a product. So one of the other things I want to make sure that we touch on is that, you know, really when you work with this partner and building a roadmap for the future is really there's three elements that can come to life in parallel. So, again, you're leveraging your internal resources, you're working with top-tier technology, you're working with best-in-class capabilities, is that you're able to do strategic planning and vision sharing that maybe you're not always able to do if you're so busy kind of operating and your staff internally is so busy operating, they don't have time to lift up their heads and focus on the vision. And so, you know, part of working with that right partner, perhaps consultant, you're able to leverage your internal people that have those visions that maybe haven't been able to enlighten other folks because they're so busy operating. By doing this, you're now able to really look at strategic planning and vision sharing down the line. Then you're able to get value add to a lot of the existing technology and processes and platforms that you have, you're able to add value to the existing needs of today and kind of tweaking that to the next level without kind of redoing everything. And then also you're able to provide, you know, your core operating and base functions at a standard level. You know you've got redundancy, you've had your business continuity planning is in place, so you're able to kind of make sure that your core operating functionality is truly in place and functioning at a very strong level. So when we look at this, you know, we look at some of the components about, you know, what makes a good partnership, and again, this can look to a consultancy as well, but, you know, it comes down to these four major components, right? It's people and knowledge management and process management. So, you know, are you, meaning you as the publisher, challenging your partner, you know, is there recruitment and development and retention of talent at the top level? Are you able to get those people with core expertise and so forth? You know, are the systems and the processes well documented? You know, sometimes you might find they're documented very well in the beginning, but then there's been so many iterations, sometimes you lose control of those processes. Well, in today's standards, you've got a document. You have to have all the versioning there so everyone understands the processes as you bring on new talent, as you expand the program. So making sure it's all documented, it's all clearly understood, and it's used across the organization is absolutely critical. And then are they at an industry standard level? Are they certified in different types of organizations, and do they meet those standards? And top-tier groups do, as well as those consultants you may work with, they're at that level as well, and they meet those standards. When looking at risk management, you know, do they understand the why and not just the what? And we talk about this a lot with our clients because clients are pulling us into the how and the why of their business needs, not just here's what I need anymore, can you do it for this? It's, can you help me, you know, evolve? Can you help me do this? So making sure that that partner understands the whys and so forth, and also understands the end-to-end view of the organization, of the publisher's organization. Do they truly understand it, and do they have those subject matter experts, which we talk about in a moment here, do they have that internally so they're able to bring that value right there? And also, you know, look at their disciplines around monthly business reviews, quarterly business reviews, annual business reviews. Is that a process and a discipline that already exists, or is it something that you're suggesting as a publisher that should already be in process, should already be a part of your dialogue early on, and how is that conducted and want to see that? And then also, you know, what is their resolution to issues? What does their escalation process look like? You know, how does that handle? So, you know, this comes down to really managing a business relationship versus managing a program. What is their view? How do they look at the relationship? Is it about program management or about relationship management? Very, very important that you can differentiate between the two. And then when looking at quality improvement, you know, what is their processes to both, you know, improvement of quality, and what is the culture like underneath that that really supports that and drives that? Is the technology team present in a lot of the discussions? We've seen technology go from back room to front room to now integrated into the content. It's very hard these days to tell the difference between where does the product end and where does technology begin. It's integrated together. Content is woven into technology, so there's no more separation, so the technology group has to be a part of those early dialogues. So, and then ultimately, what is their reputation like in the market? If you look at a partner or you look at a consulting firm, what does their reputation look like? What are you hearing about them? 5 years ago was this, today it's that. Well, it's been a heck of an evolution over the last 5 years or so within the industry, as we all know and as we're all living with. And then ultimately, you know, what does their security and delivery look like? You know, this has to be, you know, very, very strong, very, very flexible. You know, what is their systems? And one of the things that I always ask is, you know, what is that single point of failure? Yes, internally, there's a lot within the partner. There's a lot within the organization, but those connecting points, and what does that look like? And what does the redundancy look like? And something that we're hearing more, and I'm sure you're expecting more of your publishers, expecting more of their partners, what does self-auditing look like? What do their self-security checks look like, and are they sharing it with you, and are they coming back with recommendations? Security is obviously a critical matter, and as value creeps up and as content is shifting and moving, and it's no longer just a single item, it's diverse now. So what does that look like from their self-auditing and their security checks? And ultimately, you know, what is business continuity and continuous business planning look like, and making sure that they're managing their teams and their attrition, because ultimately, you know, when you lose folks, you're losing all that value. And ultimately, you know, that is what a lot of the partners are bringing, is the expertise and the processes. So one of the things, just kind of coming to the end of my portion here before I go to a case study, is when we looked at our organization at SPI, you know, we said, you know what, we've been around here for 32 years. We've done a lot of interesting things. We did things early on when they weren't necessarily being done offshore or outsourced and then offshored. So one of the things that we said was, you know what, let's formalize this. We've been innovating. We've been doing process improvement for quite a while, but let's create really a safe environment, a safe place to discuss issues. What are the needs? What are the strategies? So we formalized our approach, and we've developed the Innovation Lab, which was launched last year on a formalized basis, which is led by John Wheeler, who spoke earlier. And really what this does is formalize our process to innovate both technologies, processes, outputs, that just leverages the expertise over the last 32 years, as well as with the groups that were brought in from other parts of the industry. So this is really a cross-functional team, which touches on understanding a situation or an idea, then defining it with the client, making sure it's understood and defined well, then developing concepts and ideas, constructing them to where they're either a platform, a new technology, or a new process, testing them, beta them, so they're actually getting some type of reality, and then ultimately delivering them to an operational readiness, and then impacting a customer's business. So, you know, really looking at the 3 points of strategy, R&D, and marketing, which has really led to some exciting things for us, and more importantly to our client base. So, you know, having this type of higher level strategy formalized within our organization, and we see it happening more and more in the business, is giving that comfort, and I would expect that, you know, people are looking for that from their partners as they go forward. And, John, I didn't mean to steal all your thunder there. I don't know if you want to add anything to that statement, but obviously it's had a tremendous impact for our organization as well as for our clients' organization. It's almost given clients, once you introduce this to them, they get a real understanding and a real comfort to say, well, wait a minute, I do have a few things. You know, there are some issues. And all of a sudden it opens up to a whole new dialogue. It helps us understand the why and the how things are being done versus just what needs to be done.
Yeah, Greg.
John, any comments?
Yeah, Greg, I'd say that when we've talked to our customers and clients about the Innovation Lab and how to use it, one of the things that they've grasped very quickly as this, you know, it's a good breeding and proving ground for new ideas, and it offers a very low-risk path for them to develop and productization of, you know, some of the innovative activities that they're considering across the publishing spectrum. And it basically, as you were talking before about lifting some of the technology issues, lifting some of the staffing issues, lifting a lot of the internal issues off them, and making, you know, us as a provider, you know, responsible for those deliveries. So you've pretty covered it very well. Thanks.
I think it's important as people face this critical change and as you face your pain points, you know, is there a safe place to go? Or do I have to have a ready-made solution and then start talking to somebody? Or do I have to hire a consultant to help me develop that? You know, we really look at this as a safe and secure place to come share your ideas, concerns, and then let us work on those for you and leverage our expertise. So, what I want to share with you next is a case study. It has to do with, looking at, one of our clients wanted, this was early on, wanted to understand, okay, let me look at the capabilities of EPUB 3.0, and how it can, incorporate these capabilities into their product line, which is an existing product line. So what we were able to do was to kind of bring this into our organization. We were able to convert complex text, and we were taking it from PDF, and we converted an e-textbook of 1,300 pages, and we had our team of experts kind of, convert, dive into this and convert this textbook. So what we did was we had our own internal application we were able to utilize to convert and to extract the content from the PDFs, and then get them into able to convert them, so we were able to put them into Word. By doing that, we were able to then go and develop and employ scripts to translate the Word files to XFTML, and then package those and put those into the EPUB 3.0 file. Thank you. Sorry if I didn't click that over. And then performing that, we were able to go and do EPUB check to validate the results of this conversion, make sure we're achieving what we wanted to do, make sure it accomplished the goals, which is absolutely critical, and so ultimately deliver this back to the client. And what was great for us was, yes, we were able to meet the quality standards and so forth, and we met their expectations, but even more so after the fact, we actually exceeded their expectations. The client was very pleased with this. And what was challenging and rewarding at the same time was we were actually using new technology that really was brand new to us, brand new to the client. So, we were able to leverage that team, able to leverage our innovation lab to make sure we got to that point. We were constantly checking it, constantly reviewing it, working well with our operations team, working well with this process, and ultimately exceeding the client's expectations. So, it was an interesting process. We made it through, and we did it on time, and ultimately the client was quite pleased. So very, very important. Then what we wanted to share with you is kind of a final point here is going back to that study that we had done last fall, and really share with you, what is being outsourced, what is ultimately happening out there in the marketplace. So hopefully there's not a lot of surprises there, more maybe confirmation of what we know and what we're hearing in the marketplace or what you're feeling within your organizations. But you look at this, and what's really telling is that 58% is really the whole e-publishing and digital solutions, which is what we're really talking about today is, what are those issues, how do you address those issues, and truly confirming that these are the critical areas that are being outsourced by two-third-party partnerships, and as well as, using consultants to help guide on that process or using experts, subject matter experts within your partnerships to help guide this process. So, good news here is that 58% are being outsourced today. You can look at, the next is the publishing solutions. Then you look at, the content platforms and technology, which again really supports the whole digital era. So if you look at it, the growth and the tremendous amount of activity that we're all seeing and experiencing is in this whole digital area, and it is truly in how do you adapt to this new model, how do you look at your workflows, and how do you enable technology to get you there. So it really is an exciting process. It's an exciting time to be in this business, We spent so much of our time talking with clients about this. The sales organization has become much more of those early consultants, helping clients kind of look at these issues, understand these issues, and making sure that we bring in the right teams of people for our organization, most importantly for the client organization. So what's you know, kind of proof positive is that this trend is growing. I'm sure if you looked at this same chart 5 years ago, it would have looked very, very different. I'm sure you look at it 5 years from now, it's going to continue to evolve into the whole digital world, which fell upon us. We knew it was coming. We're in it. Each organization deals with it differently. Each organization is looking at how do they get through this? How do they where do they want to end up as an organization? It's interesting. We have future white papers coming out and things talking about, you know, what will the publisher of tomorrow look like? And so embracing the technology in the right way is going to be a critical step in that pathway to success. So, Matt, I'm going to turn this back to you. I know there's some questions coming in, and I'll let you take over and go from there. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Greg. Very informative, very interesting. We have gotten a lot of questions, and we're running a little short on time, so I'll try to get through a couple of these as quickly as I can. The first I'd like to direct to both of you. Maybe, John, you can start. Can you tell us a little bit more about your ebook services and then also your opinion on how ebooks are going to be consumed by the marketplace, you know, going forward in the future?
Well, sure. I'll take a stab at that, and certainly start it off for Greg because we both see a lot of this in the marketplace. I'd say that the trend in ebook services right now is that I think the days of simply taking what you had in print and converting it to some sort of e-product and saying you now are kind of over with. What we're seeing is that most of our publishing partners are looking to try and leverage the technical aspects of the delivery platform now for these e-products. And what that means is they're baking in a lot more interactivity. They're leveraging the fact that people are reading these on computers or tablets or even phones and are able now to use that technology there to increase, I guess, the impact of the content beyond just the printed word. And, of course, we see a lot of this in the educational world. Higher ed, we'll see it in STM. We see where journals now have videos, where they have graphs, they have items that are able to be manipulated by the user in order to support the content that's being displayed there. And if we talk about how will ebooks continue to be consumed, I think we're well on the path now of seeing extremely powerful devices that cannot just read text and display text, but can also support a lot of the media components that I was just speaking about.
Yeah, I just want to add on to that. I'll just put a consumer perspective on this. We believe that ebooks will be consumed the way the consumer wants them. And so when you look at textbooks, being sold chapter at a time, you look at, novels being consumed, you look at the way people are taking data and content, and then doing it the way they need to do it, not the way the publisher is pushing it to them. It is truly the way the consumer wants to absorb it. And so you're seeing people create their own books, right, and create their own e-books by pulling chapters, especially students and people that are looking to continue their education. So it really comes down to what is the consumer appetite and what is it looking to do. If you look at the whole, the iPhone to the iPad and so forth, really leading this and driving a lot of the consumer behavior, especially as the younger generations are coming in, it's all about, consumption of the consumer and how are they going to be doing that. So, looking at that, staying top of that, getting outside of, just publishing and looking at what are the consumer trends is what's helping us look at and build our technology platforms and make sure that we're ready for our clients moving forward.
Sure. Now, Greg, has SPI Global been helping publishers migrate from Flash to HTML5, and what are the challenges here?
I'm glad you brought that up. Yes, we actually just spoke about that at Tools of Change a couple weeks ago. John gave a great speech, and what was just the answer is yes, we're doing that. And I have never seen a response happen so quickly. After that speech, the sales team was literally flooded with requests for meetings. And the last 2 weeks, we have been having more meetings than we ever thought possible because, high-end names, folks that have just been built courses, built their programs around Flash, are now realizing they need to make this conversion. So how do I do that? When should I do that? You know, what will this mean? What will I need to support? What will you help me with? So the answer is yes. We've had very strong success, and then I think there's just such an incredible demand out there that we're rallying to meet that. And, John, this is really your area of expertise, so please feel free to comment on that.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we've had, and actually in my previous career, I spent years at a major publisher producing Flash this, Flash that, and Flash the other thing, secure in the knowledge at the time that, you know, everybody could use it. Now, here we are, you know, just a few years down the road, and while Flash isn't going to go away overnight, it's under considerable pressure as a delivery medium. And it's looking like things like HTML5, JavaScript, EPUB3 are going to supplant Flash as a methodology for delivering all of this content that's been developed, you know, basically in support of print materials. And we've had to, and this is one of the things the Innovation Lab's been working on, is come up with some very, you know, structured workflows and methodologies for disassembling. You know, in some cases, they only have the final file. They don't have any of the components anymore. So how do we disassemble all of that? How do we extract the graphics? How do we recreate the look and feel? How do we report back to the various systems that need to be reported to as far as student results? In very simple cases, there's very simple translation software available. But what we're seeing is that in a lot of cases, it takes, you know, quite an effort and a good, robust workflow in order to achieve this. And as Greg said, the level of interest is huge right now.
A couple of questions along this line. What strategies do you guys recommend to get buy-in from staffs that have been, you know, traditionally very print-centric in the pursuit of a long-term vision of transforming a department into a multimedia publisher? You want to take a crack at that, John?
Well, this is where I usually start talking about corporate inertia. But the person that asked this probably is facing a lot of the things that I faced when I was at a big publisher. That conceptually, what was a book, what was chapters, what was sections, what was, you know, front matter, all of that needs to be looked at a little bit differently. And what I have found to be effective is constant and repetitive interactions with the organizations and the people responsible for helping you and supporting you in the change of your organization from print-centric to, let's say, content-centric, and make sure that everyone is on the same page, that they understand that the direction that the organization is going, and that they see what's in it for them. That you know, all across the board, whether it's your marketing people, whether it's your authors, whether it is the production staff, whether it's the editorial groups, that they all understand, the huge effect and the huge benefits to them, in order to change their thinking, and this is something that we could do a seminar on just by itself. But if I were to boil it down to a couple of things, it would be those two. Make sure that everyone understood what's in it for them, that they understood how this is going to benefit them, how this is going to benefit their department, make their lives easier, make the organization more money, however you need to cast this and to, you know, constantly reinforce that message across the organization. Greg?
Yeah, I'd just like to add a couple of things onto that, John. And it's so important because, I had a client once say to me, "Hey Greg, listen. I earn my bonus based upon the success of our migration to the digital platform, but the print is what pays me my bonus." And so, what we find is a lot of clients are still, you know, their cash cows are still print. It's driving it, but my God, it's shrinking so quickly. And you see the growth is happening in such a tremendous side on the whole digital area. So it's really an interesting time because, you know, the majority of revenue is still print. However, it's shrinking from a percentage standpoint, and it's going to continue to shrink. And you're seeing the driven, just incredible by the whole digital. So it's about how do you harness that rocket, you know, and how do you not alienate your current cash flow that is being driven by the print. So each client is different. Each client has a different set of issues internally, whether it's, you know, legacy issues, whether it's, you know, there's just protectionism internally. So it's very hard to build that, you know, the whole group to rally behind it. However, it has to be done. It usually starts with a vision up top, and you look for those kernels of statements, those kernels of declarations that have happened. It has to be supported. It has to have a C-level executive sponsor that fully embraces it and supports it and will be there as a steady hand as things get difficult, because they do, as decisions start being made and things start to shift. But it's also important because it's where everything is moving. And it's also, you know, I also find clients trying to publishers trying to determine, what do I want to be as a publisher in 10 years? What will my role be in content creation and content enrichment and content manufacturing? And it's really getting comfortable with the publishing world going from maybe as an art to moving more of a science and more of a discipline, which, you know, it sounds a little fuzzy, but if, you know, again, this isn't the time to have this discussion, but there, you know, there are discussions that we're having about the evolution of your journal, your evolution of your books, and where is the consumer consumption coming from? So anyways, there's no quick, easy answer, but I think, John, you know, your two points are really heartfelt, and it's really an evolution. It is not a revolution, but the demand is there for it to happen very quickly.
Great. And then I did want to ask you, John, for folks that are maybe not that familiar with SPI Global, what size and kind of publishers do you typically or mostly work with?
Well, we work with the entire spectrum. I mean, we've worked with publishers with a very limited imprint of 50 or 60 books, and in some of those cases we handle the entire process for them as far as, you know, full service. We work with publishers that do 3,000 books or 3,000 journals. So there's really no particular size of publishers that we work with. And, you know, actually some of the smaller publishers are some of the more enjoyable ones that have the more interesting problems that they're willing to tackle, because they don't have, you know, all of the what I call, you know, corporate inertia that maybe a large publisher would have. So if someone out there is listening thinking that, well, with my 10 or 15 books or my, you know, two or three journals a year that we do, you know, these guys aren't for us, that's, you know, please don't take that approach, because we're quite flexible, and we can scale up or down as needed, up and down as needed to support the, you know, whatever the customer's needs are.
Yeah, I think, Matt, just to add on to that, is that even with large publishers, it's really not just one large project. It's multiple, small projects that add up to that big engagement. So, and yeah, I think you'll find that with any of the major partners that you could work with out there, you know, they really, you know, you have multiple projects that are brought together. So, the focus and the micro focus on those are something that would really scan across various size of publishing organizations.
Great. Well, unfortunately, it looks like we're just about out of time today, but I want to thank John and Greg for all of their input and information. And I also want to thank all of you for attending today's event. Special thanks to SPI Global for sponsoring the webinar. Please come see them and Book Business at the upcoming Publishing Business Conference coming up March 19th through 21st at the New York Marriott Marquis. You can check out more about the show at publishingbusiness.com. And be sure to check our webinar page at bookbusinessmag.com to get information on all of our archived and our upcoming webinars. And I'd like to lastly just ask you to take a minute to fill out a brief feedback survey that's going to appear on your screen next. We'd be very grateful for your feedback. It will help influence the types of webinars that we bring you in the future. So thanks again, everyone, and I hope to see you all at the next Book Business webinar. Take care.